Hi, friends. I'm Rob Tigan.
And I'm Joanna. And this is the Growing Home Together podcast.
We're caring for the soul of your family, helping you grow closer to God
and each other. Thank you for joining us today for the Growing Home Together podcast. Now, I don't know about your kids, but our son is super excited to be loading up his backpack and heading out the door as a fifth grader this fall. He can't wait to see his friends, get to know his teacher, and try all kinds of new things as a big kid. But we know that with all of this excitement comes a fair amount of stress, too.
Yeah, and like we learned last year, there will be rough nights of homework at the kitchen counter, and sometimes the kids won't get along, and there'll be hurt feelings. Our child will have days where he'll feel overwhelmed and pressured by all that's on his shoulders. And when that happens, we see the effects in his mood, energy, and physical health.
Yeah, and that is why we are excited to welcome today's guest, Dr. Kate Leisinger-Dean, to the podcast. Dr. Kate is a respected healthcare provider who serves our family and our community through functional medicine and chiropractic care. She is a tremendous resource for parents who want to know how to help their child clean up their stress mess and stay healthy and strong. Welcome, Dr. Kate. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, so I know in your medical practice, you are on the front lines of helping patients deal with the effects of stress on their physical health. And can you describe some of the health conditions you've treated in younger patients that are directly related to stress?
Yeah, so that's an interesting topic because from my experience and my expertise specific to stress, there's actually a difference between young folks, kids that are feeling stressed and kids that are in a stressed state, but they might not know it. Let me just explain that a little bit. So we can talk about physical symptoms or ailments that show up when kids are emotionally or mentally stressed. The last year and a half has been really rough for that for a lot of kids. And even before that, sometimes the pressures of school, the relational stresses of school, and even just being a young person in today's society can be stressful mentally and emotionally. Mm-hmm. So some of the physical symptoms that we'll see in those kiddos, you know, include things like headaches, sleep disturbance, bad dreams, indigestion, or that nervous stomach I sometimes hear it described as, sometimes bowel changes. Kids will develop little nervous habits or repetitive behaviors like nail biting, pulling out hairs, or picking at their skin. All of these things can be physical indicators of that internal mental and emotional stress. But physical signs that your kid's body is under stress, not necessarily even mentally or an emotional stress, but actually that their body is in a stressed out state, can be different things like weight gain or loss, fatigue, slowed or stunted growth, aches and pains, even things like allergies or skin disorders or hair loss called alopecia. Even beyond things like anxiety or acting out or lack of focus, learning disabilities. The list is quite large when you start to look beyond just feeling stressed out, mm-hmm. you know, or kids that are showing some of the emotional and psychological signs of stress. Looking at the physical signs, it really starts to open up. And I think, you know, for the parents that are listening, they might start to scratch their head and go, oh, wow, you know, I've seen a couple of those different physical things in my kiddo, even though they don't really seem anxious or, you know, they don't express feelings of stress emotionally or mentally. So in my practice, those were things that I would definitely keep a close eye on because, you know, a tummy ache, if we're treating it as a digestive problem, is different than a tummy ache if we're treating it as a stress problem.
Sure.
Right. Yeah. And I know for Rob and I, if one of us is feeling overwhelmed or have anxiety, we can just go to each other and say, hey, I have this situation and it's really getting to me. But sometimes our kids haven't matured to the point where they can articulate those thoughts and emotions. And so I think being able to read those physical signs is even more critical, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And we don't really teach kids necessarily how to recognize stress in their body or in their mind or in their heart. You know, we mm-hmm. don't teach them those things unless they have a problem. It's yeah. not something that we get out ahead of. A lot of parents are great about teaching kids how to deal with feelings like fear and anger, but stress is a tricky one because it doesn't always feel like fear or anger, but there's a awareness that if we can teach that sort of as they're developing, and not just wait for them to be adults to be able to process and articulate, but say, here are some things that you might notice in your body or in your mind or in your feelings that are telling you things that we can do something about instead of just waiting for it to become a problem. But yeah, that's a really good point about adults versus kids, that, you know, the coping strategies that we have available to us as adults aren't always available to kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I like the way you say that, because it is true with kids oftentimes. You know, they will, when they're dealing with stress, they will refer to maybe one of those symptoms rather than knowing exactly how to express that they're stressed like they would with fear or something. So a lot of times they will say, you know, they'll have a nervous stomach and they'll say, oh, I have a tummy ache or this pain or ache. So I like that. So you've mentioned some of the things that point to signs of stress on the outside. What are some of those things that are happening on the inside of our child's body when they're feeling stressed?
Oh, great. Great question. The two main things that we think about when we think about stress have to do with timing of stress or duration of stress, how long stress is going on, because there is a stress response that happens in our body right away that we refer to as an acute mm-hmm. stress response. And then we have a long-term stress response in the body called the chronic stress response. And those are different. So the release of hormones and the biochemical activity in the body changes as we move from an acute stressor to a chronic stressor. I find that kiddos handle acute stress remarkably well. It's the toddler that falls down and scrapes their knee and they cry for a minute, and then, you know, it feels like 30 seconds later they're giggling. You know, it's that their body responds and reacts to that stress and then moves past it. Moves past the pain, moves past the fear, moves past that fight or flight response, and doesn't remain in chronic stress. But as we age, even younger kids, we're starting to see these low-level stressors that are just kind of omnipresent in their world, mm-hmm. whether that's stuff, you know, a difficult class in school or tough social situations with friends, it can be family issues, whether there's problems at home or in the extended family, global pandemic.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
Just to name a few.
Yes. Like, I'm thinking about my son as you're talking, like a year ago, March, when they sent all the kids home from school, and that started just a crazy season of stress for him and every other child that we know. And then through the summer, now I'm isolated, now I'm bored, now mom has COVID and I'm worried about my mom, and now we're in quarantine, and it just seemed like the stress kept going on and on and on. And yeah. I don't think we had seen kind of that long-term stress so clearly in one of our kids before, and how he was feeling and acting in August after all those months of that compared to the little boy that he was in March was really markedly different. So yeah, I'm glad that you're talking about the chronic stress. We hadn't really unpacked that before.
So what's interesting about chronic stress then is acute stress has to do with adrenaline. A lot of us understand the adrenaline feeling. I always call it the roller coaster feeling, mm-hmm. right? That woo. And then it kind of, you know, you feel it kind of tingle through your body and then it's gone. So acute stress and adrenaline go together, whereas chronic stress and cortisol go together. It's really nice that they have the same first letter. It's like really great to help you remember. Cortisol being the longer term stress hormone, that's the one that when we sort of get stuck in that fight or flight response, mm-hmm. that acute stress doesn't turn off and it doesn't go away, then over time, cortisol is the thing that starts to affect our immune system, growth, the chemicals in our brain. You know, we were talking about your son and how he seemed so different, even personality, probably you saw some changes. Mm-hmm. And that can be partly, you know, the biochemistry of his brain has changed. It can affect our blood sugar. So that can make us, you know, have really strong fluctuations in energy and fatigue. We'll see a lot of the crashing that happens with kiddos after an adrenaline burst, or it can increase overall inflammation. So you get more growing pains or you get more headaches that I was talking about. That's more the cortisol. So that's that chronic stress that we have to figure out how to help the help kiddos turn that cortisol off or get back into that rest and digest phase, which is the opposite of fight or flight.
Okay.
And there's lots of ways to do that, which we can get into later. But I think that it's really important to acknowledge the very, very physical results or sequela of this chronic mental and psychological and social and emotional stress, because it gives us another input to help resolve it. If all we're doing is focusing on the mental and emotional side and we ignore the whole physical side, we can just sort of hit a roadblock or hit a wall where we feel like we just can't quite get over it or get mm-hmm. back to normal. You know, I mentioned neurotransmitters can change in the brain. Well, it can also change back. You know, the brain is so regenerative and we say plastic, meaning that it can shift and change and rewire itself as needed. But getting there takes the effort and making sure that you're realizing, hey, this is going on in my child's body, not just in their mind and not just in their heart, but their body too, so that you can address those things.
Yeah, one thing that started to become kind of a more obvious pattern in that season of kind of chronic stress for our son was his cravings for carbohydrates. You kind of alluded to that a little bit a minute ago. And so he'd be walking through the house and you knew he wasn't really hungry because we gave him a decent meal not that long ago, but he'd be like, hey, can I have a crunchy snack? And I think he was just trying to like eat his feelings. And I'd never seen that in him before. But there is a connection between his eating habits and his moods and energy. And so I was hoping you could help us understand how nutrition plays a part in a child's physical stress response.
Yeah. And we would say, you know, like you mean crunchy snack, like an apple or a carrot, but it was, no, it was usually like a chip
mm-hmm.
or a
mm-hmm. So the thing about carbohydrates and sugars and grains is that it's a really quick source of energy. So if you think about the body sort of existing in this fight or flight place, this high stress state where really they're just in survival mode, quick and easy sources of energy make sense. You know, the body is going to crave those things because it's preparing to run away from the tiger or mm-hmm. to head for the hills or to fend off, you know, a threat. So the brain is telling the body, hey, we're going to get our skedaddle on here pretty quick. So can you make sure that we've got quick, easy access to this energy? And so that's where those cravings come from. So when you're in that stress state, let's say you're playing a basketball game or a soccer game, you need those things. You know, that's a good thing for your child to have. But if they're not engaging in that activity that should be ramping up their stress response, if they're in fight or flight when they should be in rest and digest, not only does their brain tell them, yeah, simple carbs are good for energy, but they're also easy to break down. And so sometimes that nervous stomach or the stomach issues that can come along with stress is because the body isn't properly digesting foods, especially foods that are harder to break down. Mm. Because it's just sitting there. You know, we're not getting into the place where the brain is going, okay, now it's time to break down your food. You know, when you're running away from a bear, your body doesn't care if you're digesting your lunch. Yeah. It's focused on other things. So if we can get into the rest and digest phase a little bit better, then foods that are higher in fiber, you know, like an apple or a carrot, or foods that are higher in, you know, proteins and healthy fats, those become easier to break down, and the body will call for those things. Will ask the brain, hey, can you, you know, can we get a craving for something else? So whenever I'm making recommendations around, in understanding what the body is asking for, what the body needs, or why that's happening, understanding that underlying physical stress response becomes really important. And then if what we're trying to do is shift, you know, that's the other thing. It's a chicken or the egg, right? So if we're stressed out and our brain is craving these things, feeding our body differently than maybe what it's asking for can actually help shift the body out of that stress response too. So it becomes, you know, two sides of the same coin. You can utilize that physical stress response or how nutrition affects stress to then change the body's stressed state. Does that make sense how I'm saying that?
Yeah. So food is powerful. That's really good news for us, I think.
It's great news. It takes some understanding, I think, and you know, when you're a parent going, okay, you know, I see this behavior in my kid, how, you know, what are the things that I'm looking to do? There are a couple general, things to think about. First of all, because long-term stress is an inflammatory process, just inherently that cortisol that we were talking about that goes along with chronic stress tends to raise the body's inflammation. It really helps to eat a lot of anti-inflammatory foods. This is something where most people are pretty familiar with, whether it's antioxidant or superfoods. We all kind of have buzzwords for anti-inflammatory foods now. The main categories that I think of are vegetables, certain fruits, not all fruits, but a lot of fruits, clean animal protein, healthy fiber. A lot of these things can be very anti-inflammatory. So from a perspective of a kiddo dealing with, you know, headaches or aches and pains, or even allergies or skin rashes, eating more anti-inflammatory foods can really help calm that part of this, their physical stress response down. Okay. And then the other thing that I often see nutritionally is a lack of healthy fats and also fiber. Now, both of these foods help slow down the body's process of getting energy from food, and it evens out that up and down sort of energy crash, energy spike sort of thing. My mom is a teacher, and she will tell you all about the post-lunch energy spike and then subsequent nap time crash, right? Because kids are eating, you know, a breadstick and a chocolate pudding with chocolate milk, and that's kind of it. You know, that would be their lunch. And those kids get this initial, like, hyperactive, woo, sugar high, and then there's nothing left. There's no fat or fiber or protein left in their body. And then they do this sort of crash. And that can be really stressful on the body, but also really stressful mentally and emotionally for kids, because it makes it really hard to focus. It makes it really hard to get your schoolwork done. It makes it really hard to not be crabby with your friends or your parents. So I think, you know, eating enough healthy fats as well as fiber, instead of eating mostly grains and carbs and sugars, because that's what kid food is, quote unquote. You know, I had a conversation with a friend who said, hey, what are some healthy snacks that, you know, that kids can eat? And I said, well, what healthy snacks do you eat? That's, you know, most of the time, those things are can be the same. You know, right. unless your kiddo doesn't have teeth yet, if you're eating trail mix, you know, that would be a great option for them. If you're eating veggies and hummus, that would be a great option for them. I have a friend whose kids think that sauerkraut and sardines are the best kid snack ever because that's what they've been fed. You know, the idea that certain foods are for kids and others are not for kids, that's largely cultural.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, since we lean towards those sweet, easy to break down, carbohydrate heavy, you know, easy texture for kids, because I know that's a thing for a lot of children, then we're missing out on all of those healthy fats and fiber that can really make a huge effect on kids' brains and kids' hormones and mm-hmm. neurotransmitters and the stress response in general.
Yeah, so
yeah, that's really helpful.
Yeah, I've got a confession here. I've got to admit that one of our family little traditions is on Thursday mornings I do donut day. So I head down the street to our local donut place and get our son his favorite bird's nest donut with, you know, it's even got the extra frosting there in the middle, which
adorable.
Probably doesn't help. But so I'm guessing that's not maybe the greatest way to send him off for a stress-free Thursday, you know?
Well, so here's the thing. What if you did half the donut and some scrambled eggs with red peppers and some cut up turkey sausage? And, you know, you can balance it out. It doesn't mean no, never to grains, carbs, and sugars. That's certainly not realistic or healthy. But I think sometimes if you then give him something substantial that's going to stick with him,
mm-hmm.
he'll feel a lot better throughout the morning. So he's not crashing at 10 a.m. and having to wait for lunch or get a snack or, you know, those kind of things. I think there are ways to not say no, but to tweak or limit to special occasions certain things that, unless a child has a food sensitivity or an allergy to it, would be in the snack or the treat category.
Sure.
Right? I think there's certainly ways to get around that. I have a somebody that I follow on social media who she is a mom who has developed a whole lot of great recipes for her kids. It's her first name is Renee and it's Raising Generation Nourished, I believe.
Okay.
But they do breakfast cookie Fridays. But what the deal is you eat a hard boiled egg and you eat a breakfast cookie.
Okay.
You know, so she kind of just makes sure that even on those special days, they've got something to balance it out. And it's easier for her too, because she can make a bunch of breakfast cookies, throw them in the freezer, you know, do a bunch of hard boiled eggs, and she doesn't have to cook breakfast for everybody. So gotcha. It's this anti-stress for each party, which I think is
there you
also
go.
Important.
Well, we kind of had a funny thing going on this past school year. Our son's classmates found out that he likes vegetables, and the kids were given every day single serving packs of different kinds of vegetables, which was a really mm-hmm. cool thing that the school mm-hmm. provided for his classroom, but the kids weren't necessarily interested in eating them. And so they're like, well, Mason likes vegetables. So then they would give them all to him. And then he was coming home with backpacks full of broccoli. And I'm sorry, but broccoli that sits in a backpack for more than about 30 minutes is like, oh my goodness. Not
yeah, sometimes
super
he'd forget to tell us
yeah,
about
the broccoli.
Yeah, he'd
forget to tell us about it. So, but I don't think we had to go to the store and purchase broccoli the entire school
nice.
Year.
It was
hilarious. Yeah.
That's really funny that you say that, because my mom, the teacher, if you go to her house, she has a whole drawer in her fridge with those same things, because she's so frugal. She grew up so, you know, like, you don't waste food, right? That she just goes around and collects all the ones that the kids won't eat and takes them home.
Yeah.
Smart
mom. If our
son
was there, she wouldn't have had any to bring home, I'm sure.
She can't help herself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah.
Hi, friends. Rob and Joanna Tigan of Growing Home Together are the parents of five kids ranging in age from elementary school to high school to adult newlyweds. They know the fun and joy and also the stress and confusion that could come with raising kids through all the ages and stages of growing up. Just like you, they worry over their children's safety and well-being. They feel the pressure to train their kids to do what's right, and they carry sadness when their kids struggle or make poor choices. And as parents like you, their greatest hope is to bring up children who know God's love in their life. But Rob and Joanna know they can't control what happens to their kids or the people they become. They have learned how important it is to place their sons and daughters in God's hands. And most of all, they have learned the power of prayer to make a difference in their children's lives. That is why they are so passionate to help moms and dads like you to pray for your kids. They created two amazing resources, Powerful Prayers for Your Son and Powerful Prayers for Your Daughter. These beautiful books offer page after page of targeted prayers that cover every kind of challenge and hope your kids will face as they grow. Is your child facing hard circumstances? Are they lonely or anxious? Do they struggle to know God or trust Him? Is it hard to build a close relationship together? Take hold of Powerful Prayers for Your Son and Powerful Prayers for Your Daughter to invite God's love and power into your child's life today. Each title is available for you at growinghometogether.com or wherever books are sold. And now, back to the show.
Well, you know, one of probably the toughest health challenges we've had faced with our son is insomnia. We finally have it managed now and he sleeps great, but I know that lack of sleep had a major impact on his stress and his quality of life at the time. So how does sleep play a part in all this with our kids and their anxiety, and how can we promote good quality sleep for our kids?
One of the main ways that stress physically affects sleep is that it messes up our melatonin production, especially if we're not in a regular circadian rhythm. Mm-hmm. Circadian rhythm means sleep-wake cycle. So the time that you're awake and the time that you're asleep, we want it to be about the same or really close to the same each day, if possible. Now, especially in the last year when we were doing school from home, you know, virtual classes, a lot of kids' routine was just totally disrupted. You know, this is the time I wake up, this is the time I go to bed, this is the time I eat lunch, all that was kind of the same. And then all of a sudden it wasn't, you know, it's kind of thrown into chaos. So one of the best ways to promote that quality sleep is to have a bedtime routine. And it can be fairly long. Like I usually ask for about a minimum of 30 minutes of this routine that might include things like brushing your teeth. It might include, for some kids, listening to a mindfulness episode. It might include reading part of a book. It might include setting out their clothes for the next day, or these little things, you know, that just, they've got this routine. It's a long, slow process that helps their brain know, hey, we're getting ready to sleep. You know, their body knows, okay, rest and digest is coming up. Instead of run, 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 go, 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 homework, quit, get everything done, and then boom, now it's time to sleep. No, that's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, the body needs to be prepped.
Yeah.
So that routine can be helpful. And you know, the other big thing, one of the things that can be very stressful for everyone is uncertainty. And there's only so much that we can control when it comes to uncertainty in our kids' lives. But having them at least know, okay, this time of night, I am sure that this is going to be my bedtime routine. And I am sure that this is going to be when I'm in bed. And I know that this is the time I have to wake up. Just having that be a certainty in their little world, I think can really reduce, you know, that stress response. The other thing I would say is screens, computer screens, laptops, iPads, TV screens, phone screens, all of these things can have an effect on our circadian rhythm too. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I talk about this more with adults, but sometimes kids will watch a show, you know, to try to fall asleep. on an iPad, or, you know, that's their little nighttime, you've got a 30-minute kids show. Well, that's actually telling the brain to stay awake. Mm-hmm. It's not a good idea. We need, you know, paper books. We need to stay away from screens. The rule of thumb is an hour between your last screen time and your sleep time.
Okay.
And that can really help, as kids are more and more spending time on screens in general. That can, and I know for kids doing virtual school, all of a sudden it went way up. They're spending all this time on screens and hardly any time in the natural light. That can certainly also affect sleep and sleep quality.
Well, it's tricky with stress and sleep because it seems like a catch-22 for our kids, not just our son, but all of our kids. If they're stressed, it would interfere with their sleep. And then if they felt like they couldn't sleep, that would actually escalate their stress. And sometimes it was really difficult for them to take whatever they were worried about and shut that off at bedtime. And so one thing that helped our son for a while was we hung a poster board on the wall of his bedroom, and we called it his worry wall. And if there was kind of a persistent anxious thought that he had trouble shutting down at bedtime, he could write it on his worry wall, share it with us, and then we could pray with him before he went to sleep. And it seemed like in doing that, he was able to really release it and let it go. And that made a difference too.
I love that. That's a wonderful strategy.
Yeah.
Anytime you can take a step back from an emotion or a thought, doesn't matter if you're a kid or adult, anytime you can take a step back and see it or hear it from an outside perspective to create space between you and the thought or you and the feeling, that reduces your body's stress response. Mm-hmm. So that's exactly what you were doing, right? You were taking the thought out of his brain and putting it on this paper so he could see it and process it differently instead of just having it swirling around inside. That's awesome. What a great strategy.
Yeah, it was neat. And then it was neat because at one point he said he didn't need it anymore. And that was really amazing. It's almost like through that process of continually giving his concerns to God and sharing them with us, it almost became more of a built-in habit, so he didn't need a sheet of paper to accomplish that for him anymore. So that was kind of neat.
And what a tool for him growing up too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
To be able to come back to that, you know, whether it's in a journal or talking to, you know, a therapist or a trusted friend or sharing those things within his, you know, your faith community as you grow up, that's something he can return back to over and over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm thinking back to last spring, and our son had this huge social studies project going on. So it involved cutting and gluing and posters and costumes, and it was something he worked on over days and weeks. So it was really a huge deal for him. He'd never really tackled a school project that big. And one night he was kind of looking at his task list around this thing, and he started to get really grumpy, and he wouldn't stay in his seat, and he was really struggling to focus. And we were watching him just shut down right in front of us. So we were hoping you could tell us, in a situation like that, when you see your kids' stress just all of a sudden go through the roof, as moms and dads, what can we do right then and there to help cut the kids' stress down and kind of move them through it to the other side?
Mm-hmm. So it depends, I think, on severity. But in that situation, if we get ahead of it a little bit and teach kids some of those anti-stress techniques that they can then access on their own as well, then as a parent, you can either model that and say, hey, I think, you know, one of the examples that I use is a exercise called five finger breathing, where you breathe in and out as you trace your finger around each of your five fingers. And it helps you slow your breath. It helps you reduce, you know, adrenaline. It can help you focus. So a lot of kids will use it when they get freaked out during a test. You know, it's quiet. You know, you can do it anywhere, anytime. You don't even have to close your eyes. But it really, you know, there's been a lot of research around breathing and deep breathing and intentional in and out breathing that that can be super helpful. I actually, again, because my mom's a teacher and I really saw a need for some of these techniques with all of the virtual school and uncertainty of the last couple years, I actually put together a video series for kids called The Stress Mess and How to Clean It Up. And I have a few of those techniques built into that video. It's designed for grade school age kids. And it really explains different techniques like that, including that five finger breathing, in a easy to understand, non-scary way for the kiddos so that they can remember, okay, you know, or you as a parent, if you see this happening, you can say, all right, what do we need to do? What kind of exercises, you know, can we do some breathing together? Maybe we need to hum a quick little tune and stimulate the vagus nerve so that we can get our brain back online. So behavioral stuff like that can be really, really helpful if we get ahead of it, like I said, and teach these strategies before it becomes a problem. I think I mentioned before, trying to catch up with something is a lot easier when you already have those tools in place. So I'm happy to share, you know, that video series for your listeners. I think watching that together, you know, kids and parents together, might be really useful too, to sort of create that, you can create a plan around when these things start to happen as well.
That's great.
Yeah. And then for kids with more, you know, more severe, more panic symptoms, I will sometimes recommend a supplement that's made from, it's actually made from colostrum. So colostrum is a certain part of mother's milk that is very, very calming. You hear of, or you've known of, babies that breastfeed getting sort of milk drunk, right? Like after they eat, they're just totally chilled out. And it's that extract that's in there in this supplement called Nucera that calms really quickly. So if there's a child who tends to do the spiral, and what I mean by that is something small will trigger and then they just can't seem to quite get themselves out of it no matter what they're doing. It's a very safe way to sort of break that cycle. It's chewable. It's ideal for kids. It's really nice after nightmares too. So if a kiddo wakes up in the night and they're just in a total panic state, you can use that specific type of nutrition. You know, it's food. It's a specific food, but it's a specific nutrient to also to help calm that down if it's a little bit more severe or if it's more of a pattern. I've had some kids and adults actually who use it quite effectively.
Yeah, well, I can definitely echo how awesome your Stress Mess videos are. And that whole trick you mentioned about humming was so new to me. And I thought we had heard a lot about how to help kids manage anxiety. And that was a really fun new one for us. So I am going to make sure to put the link to those in the show notes, everybody. And you also mentioned Nucera, and that's something that has been a huge blessing to our family. They're yummy. They're easy. They work within 20 minutes, I'm telling you. So I'll make sure we put a little link in there too, where we'll get it from you, Dr. Kate. So thanks for that.
You bet. I want to stress too that Nucera, you know, if you've got a job where you have to give presentations and you get really nervous or you don't like to fly, or, you know, adults can use it as well. It's not just for kids, but it's certainly great to have something easy and, like you said, yummy that they're not going to turn their nose up at taking, especially if they're already feeling kind of grouchy or out of sorts.
Right. Well, I know that I take them, and I have to say, I mean, stress is not unique to our kids. And I know, I feel pressure to stay on top of our schedule and juggle all the things. And with this new school year, that ramps up for moms and dads too. And I know for sure that my stress can escalate my child's anxiety also. So can you share a quick stress relieving tip for moms and dads who want to be calm for their kids?
My favorite, for a lot of reasons that I'll say in a minute, has to do with our breath and with breathing. A lot of times we go through our day and we don't take a deep breath unless we're yawning or we're sighing. And that's signs that your body's not getting enough oxygen, actually, both of those things, because we don't take deep, full, measured, in and out breaths, unless we're exercising really, you know, intently every day. It's just not something that we do. We tend to take these really shallow breaths, and we don't get good diaphragm stimulus of that vagus nerve. And the vagus nerve is one of the unconscious nervous system's way to help regulate our body's stress response. So even just taking, you know, 5 deep breaths in and out, where you breathe in less than you breathe out, so the longer breath out, can be really helpful. It's one of the most researched solutions for stress. It's easy. You can do it in 10 minutes. It's totally free. I use an app on my phone called Headspace, but there's tons of different breathing breathwork options out there if you struggle to kind of really focus your efforts and get into a good headspace or mental space when you're trying to do breath work. But I, you know, a lot of folks that I counsel who are in a faith community or who have a, you know, a personal faith journey, they will practice their breath work as part of their prayer and meditation, or their, you know, journaling or their devotionals. They'll kind of tie those two things together because it helps to get out of your head, number one, but then it also helps you to be ready in a good mindset to receive as well, whatever it is you need to receive. And most of us, it's calm, you know, or peace or joy or all these things that we're asking for. If we stop, breathe deeply in and out, and can clear enough room in our brain to receive, then, you know, then I think that enriches both our body's ability to manage and cope with stress. It enriches our child's ability to do that, and it enriches our spiritual life. So it's kind of a, you know, a threefer at that point, which is great.
Yeah, for sure.
That's great. At Growing Home Together, we're really committed to caring for the soul of your family. And so, you know, we often think of the importance of soul care for adults with church or faith community. But can you share a little bit about how it affects our children's ability to cope with stress being part of a church or a faith community?
Absolutely. I mentioned before that a big stressor for kids is uncertainty. And when kids are, you know, when they know that they're surrounded by a community of people, not just their parents, not just their grandparents, but a whole community of people who love them, who care for them, who are willing to walk through life with them, I think it just gives them that additional anchor or foundation so that they can explore the world and take risks and figure out who they are without all of that stress and that uncertainty kind of hovering over them. You know, the other thing that I think is important is for a child is knowing that even if things are not in your own control, that you have a community and that you have a belief that they are in someone else's control, right? Mm-hmm. Whether that's God, whether that, you know, whatever your faith community is, that you know that you don't have to have it all figured out. You don't have to have it all, you know, together. You don't have to have everything under control. And I think that is huge, along with a, you know, a community, for really reducing some of those common triggers of stressors, you know, for kids. Right. In a scientific perspective, one of the hormones that's really very helpful for decreasing cortisol, which is that long-term stress hormone, is oxytocin. You might recognize oxytocin. We think about it mostly in relation to childbirth and breastfeeding, but it's also that hormone of bonding, or it's the love hormone. So it's feeling close to our loved ones, feeling a part of a community, and feeling, you know, that bonding, not just child parent, and it's not just a female thing. It's everybody makes oxytocin. But for a child to have that safe community where they can explore that bonding and get those yummy, calming, lovely doses of oxytocin from a wider community, you know, that can be very lowering for cortisol as well. So on a physical perspective, you know, we can extrapolate being part of a community, faith-based community, as, you know, physically healthy too when it comes to stress, which is pretty awesome.
Right. I know. And I think during the pandemic, you know, our kids had to give up a lot of their school community experience. And then, at least around here, our kids had to give up their church community experience too, because everything shut down. And really, mm-hmm. it was the church community sharing that was probably emotionally a greater loss to our son, because at church, you don't have to perform. You're not being graded. You just come as you are and people love you. And mm-hmm. so, yeah, that season when he had to miss out on that, I know that played a part on why the pandemic felt especially difficult, and being able to reintegrate into our community has just been awesome. I'm so glad we're back. Yeah. So many
happy hormones.
Yes.
Happening.
So many.
So good.
Yeah. So, okay. What if I check off all the boxes this school year? I make the healthy meals. I fill his lunchbox with good stuff. We get good sleep. We exercise. We do our deep breathing. But after all of that, I still see my child just having a tough time managing stress and watching it affect the quality of life. When is it time for a parent to look for outside support?
That's a great question. I think I would add to your list of checking off the boxes, and I'm sure you meant this as well, but one of the boxes that I know sometimes doesn't get checked is the focus becomes on the child and the child's behavior and the child's stress, and parents or families aren't addressing their own dysfunction or stress or relationship issues or anxiety or depression. We know that children are mirrors. You know, and you mentioned earlier that one of the biggest things that affects your kid's stress is if you're stressed. Mm-hmm. And so I think sometimes when we are in problem solving mode for our kids, it's easy to put ourselves on a back burner. But what we need to do is make sure that we're also taking care of our own relationship with stress and managing our own stress, because it's really remarkable how much that can affect kids' stress. So mm-hmm. that would be one more thing to make sure that we're checking off before feeling like we need to, you know, look to other options. Because other options aren't necessarily going to help if there's still that going on in a child's immediate family environment.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right.
That's a good point.
Right. As far as general, let's assume that that's all being done as well, that as a family, you're all working really hard on all these things to help manage stress. I think depends on how well the child is functioning in school or friendships or the child's age. Some ages are inherently more difficult. And if you can kind of work through them, if you can kind of get over the hump, sometimes it's appropriate to just kind of keep pushing through. I'm never against getting outside advice. You know, I think getting other people's perspectives is always a great option. I think counseling and talk therapy is always a great option, especially for kids, not only because it's helpful for kids, but because it sets them up to understand that that's a, you know, it's something that they can access later, kind of like your worry wall, right? You know, if a child works with a counselor early in their life and then doesn't end up needing that counselor, at least it's normalized for them to work with a mental health professional in the future. Mm-hmm. Sometimes medications are the right call depending on severity, but more often I see parents who are pressured to sort of jump straight to that, to pharmaceuticals, and that, you know, they haven't tried something like Nucera, or they haven't tried, you know, changing their diet. But not to say it's not always appropriate. I mean, it's hard to give a general answer to that, but I typically like to see kids work with those less invasive strategies first before jumping on to, you know, medications or pharmaceuticals.
Right. Yeah. Well, what I'm hearing you say is that there's so much we can do to support our kids physically in managing their stress. There's so much out there in the traditional medical community, in the counseling and therapeutic community. And, you know, as moms and dads, sometimes we feel like we don't have the discernment that we wish we did to know kind of which way to turn. And mm-hmm. when there are so many great options, and they probably you're not going to pick just one, you're going to need to kind of wrap a whole set of supports around your child. So we usually like to close out our podcast in prayer. And Rob was hoping to just take a minute to ask God to just give us that, to help us as moms and dads heading into this school year to know the best things we can do for our kids' unique situation to support them in their stress. So, yeah. Can you take a minute, Rob?
Yeah. Okay. Lord, we just thank you that you are amazing and you are a God of infinite wisdom, and you offer it. You tell us to cast our cares upon you because you care for us, and so we can take our stress to you, and you are the one that made our bodies this way and made our emotions and made our responses so that we, our brains and our body can tell us when we're holding too much stress, and then you give us places to go with it. You give us community, which you say is so important, and you give us your spirit and your word and all these different ways, Lord, that we can seek you and your wisdom to guide us through. So, Lord, I just pray for the parents that are listening that are maybe trying to manage their own stress or are having to admit now that they've been carrying around stress and bringing it into the family. Lord, I pray that you would give them direction and help them give that to you and give them direction with whether it's food or physical or mental or emotional, whatever they have to do, Lord, I just pray you'd guide them through that. And then also with their kids, Lord, as we just go into this new school year, I just pray for your blessing on the families that are listening. And I just pray, God, that you'd guide them and lead them through each step of the way as their kids encounter various stresses and their body responds. Lord, I just pray that you'd give them the wisdom and direction they need. We thank you for this time. We thank you for Dr. Kate and just all the great practical advice and wisdom that she gave us today. And I just pray that you would bless her and what she's doing as well, helping so many people to handle their stress and give them direction. So thank you for this time. In Jesus' name, amen.
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 Well, Dr. Kate, I know that our friends who are listening are going to really want to run out from here and take hold of your resources. So can you tell us all where we can connect with you online and a little more about the resources you have for families?
Absolutely. I have a few different resources on my website, one of which is the Stressless Starter Kit. That's more geared towards adults who are interested in understanding from a functional medicine perspective how stress works in the body and different things that they can do. There's dietary resources. There's the quote-unquote adult version of some of the coping strategies that are also in my Stress Mess Kids videos, part one and two. The second part relates more to the immune system. Again, I was creating these during the pandemic, and I figured, hey, kids need to understand how the immune system works too. So I'll give you a link where you can sort of access all of that. Maybe you can put it in the show notes. Otherwise, my website is www.drkatelld.com. And I have everything resourced there as well.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Kate. We are just thrilled that we got to spend this time with you today. And you really have given us so much practical help that we can start using immediately. We really appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm grateful for the opportunity.
Yes, thanks, Dr. Kate. And thank you, friends, for joining us today at the Growing Home Together podcast. Joanna and I have also found that prayer is really powerful in helping us cope with our own stress and with our kids' stress and worries in life. So we'd love to put those resources in your hand and help you pray for your kids. Just visit our website at growinghometogether.com for free downloads, books, and articles to encourage you and your family. At Growing Home Together, we're caring for the soul of your family.
And we're growing home together with you. Bye-bye.
Bye.